This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, featuring the best of the best from today's conversations, observations, and ruminations, because great radio is still fresh the second time around. Earlier today on the Mac and Bone Show.
I'm filibustering around your questions, but I will say that it isn't like you can just move a pile of cash to the table, at the middle of the table, and someone's going to say, "Yeah, I'm going to come play for the Panthers." I mean, they might be working at the second level of free agency this spring.
Joe Person yesterday, I guess it was Monday. Joe Person Monday, I believe, with Kyle Bailey on the KB show from The Athletic. Check out all his work. He's covered the offseason really well. He and Mike K over at The Observer as well. But Joe Person telling us Panther fans, don't expect the big names in free agency. And that's not what we want to hear, but maybe it is what we need to hear. That Burns, that's the rub with the Burns franchise tag, Bone. It takes up $24 million of your cap money. And has us down to what SpotTrack says is $13 million right now. Now, I believe there'll be a lot of releases, restructures. It sounds like Dante will save us $6 million. Sounds like Hurst will be released, but won't really save us a ton. But I think there's more to come. That Taylor Moten $29 million figure, they can't let him play at that, I don't think. They got to get that down with a restructure.
That's a very obvious restructure situation.
Yeah, it screams restructure. And I think there's more fat they can trim in terms of players that they could let go to try to get cap room. But that's another of the many things that sucks about the Burns thing, Bone, is it takes up all that cap money. You sign Burns to a long-term deal, and then you structure it so that, like, when they have big cap money in 25 and 26, the hits go up. They could bring that cap hit down. I mean, they could have him like $7, $8 million cap hit this year.
Yeah.
You know, realistically.
Whatever the contracts come out right away might not be what they are ultimately. The Saints are the example of that. They signed someone 1 year with the thought. Imagine it's also planned restructuring. Hey, we're going to give this guy this deal right now, but next year we can do this, 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 and this. So whatever the number of a contract might be right now, who knows what it might be in a year or two. Everything gets moved around right now in the NFL.
Yes, but it sounds like Joe Person does not expect us to sign contracts, Bone, that are big ones right now. That's what he does not expect.
Someone's going to restructure an $800 contract.
But maybe that'd be WFNZ with Flound. You know what I mean? Maybe they'll restructure that deal.
Well, there goes my coffee. Thank you.
All right. Just kidding, Flound. Just kidding, baby.
Back into my cup over
underpaid.
Here.
This man's the most underpaid at the station, Rick. All right? Most underpaid at the station.
There you go.
Don't be making jokes when I'm sipping coffee, all right?
That's dangerous. All right. So let's talk about what might be the free agent plan. We'll throw some names out. If y'all have any names you want to throw out, throw them out. Or if you have any feelings on these positions, there are four positions, Bone, that the insiders have been pointing to that the Panthers are going to look to upgrade. Obviously, wide receiver is one of them. That's the least shocking development of them all. Joe Person has been big
on. It's hard not to upgrade it.
Well, it's true.
They could put 50-year-old Mac out there, and I might think, you know what? It's maybe a separation issue, but other than that, I like him out there.
It could be an improvement. So wide receiver, multiple sources saying they're going to improve that. We all can figure that out on our own. Joe Person has been big on, and Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, they have both heard the Panthers really want to add guard help this offseason. Mike Kay has been pushing the center and the tight end things. He is hearing, his sources are telling him, they will definitely address center and tight end. We found out yesterday from Joe Person they're going to release Hayden Hurst. I wonder if they release Ian Thomas also to save $2 million, $3 million, depending on
feels
if
like
June 1st it or not.
Feels like we've had the Ian Thomas discussion through various regimes here.
Yes, that has been one constant. That and losing have been the constants here the last few years. So, Bone, what do you think about those positions? Wide receiver is the obvious one, but tight end? Makes sense, especially if you were to part with Thomas and Hurst. and then guard and center. Like, what positions, how should they be ordered? Let's start with that before we, like, throw out names and wildly speculate about what the plan could be. Like, what? How do you order those four spots in terms of we need to upgrade?
I went wide receivers, guards, center three, not because I don't like Bozeman. I just wonder about the scheme fit and the contract there. Mac, I'm all about them getting a young, dynamic tight end, but in this particular case here, can you maybe for 1 year save a little money in free agency and just let Tommy Tremble be the man for 1 year as a young tight end, see what he's got, and just hope that maybe as the main guy he flourishes? He showed stuff last year in an offense that didn't show much. Maybe on this list, I put tight end four. Maybe you let Tremble be the guy and just see, put Tremble and Sullivan maybe as your 1-2 tight ends. I don't know, and see how they do offensively.
Although another guy, Tremble and Sullivan, you know what I mean? If they bring in somebody that they view as even better than those two. I mean, I'm
just trying to go by, hey, can they maybe for 1 year
okay, see so what Tremble has. What you're saying is, like, yes, Mac, we could use help at all these spots. But which one, like,
can they address all of them?
Yeah. Which one is the least important to address?
And I think tight end is vastly important. Is Greg Olson listening right now? Tight end is hugely important. When you look at the best teams in the league, they've all got dynamic tight ends. I'm not saying that. But for what they need right now, what they have to address, can you address all their needs right now? I don't know. Can you just see what Tremble maybe has for a year? And if it works out, you go, oh, okay, we got one of those guys.
I was intrigued by Tremble. I thought he definitely showed some flash. The most flashes he showed in his career, I thought he showed this year. I'm kind of interested in the Will Disley or the Kobe Parkinson thing. They're two guys, Bone, from Seattle. Seattle tight ends at Canales, and many of our coaches on offense have a history with.
Walt Disney?
What is his name? Will Disley?
Oh, yeah.
Disley. Not to be confused with the great Walt Disney.
Would you take Walt Disney in this offense? I probably would.
He could separate better than DJ Chark.
There's Disney characters I would take a tight end in this offense, all right? You can't tell me that Pluto can't run a go route.
It's,
you
know, Bryce
can't
Young.
Run the seam.
Bryce Young throws it to Goofy down the seam.
But anyway, like, that's a name that a lot of the writers have been pointing out is those two names. Seattle has three tight ends, by the way, that Canales has a history with that are out there. Those are two that are interesting to me. I'm not saying, Bone, the tight end addition is going to be big. And this goes back to Joe Person trying to almost urge us as Panther fans to not, you know what I mean, to not expect great names so that we're not heartbroken when we don't get these great names.
Jonnu Smith is no longer going to be a Falcon. And
yeah, he's out there.
What, he have almost 600 yards last year?
He's out there.
That's an idea of a guy that might not be the most elite, but does he fit in? And then you
but could be affordable.
Yeah.
But I think the play is to cut Thomas too, in addition to Hurst and bring in a tight end, but not spend a lot of money there. As far as the O-line, like, I'm really wondering, Bone, if the plan is, I know I'm the only guy talking about Corbett, and maybe I'm like, maybe what I'm saying is just full of crap. And I should have asked Mike Kay about it, because it seems like now the writers are really on to the Bozeman thing. So you can say $4.4 million if you cut Bozeman. He's not going to be a scheme fit because Canales runs wide zone also. But the Corbett thing, you could post June 1st, cut him and make him a $6.8 million savings. Like, could they, Bone, go after center and guard? Like, you can get a starting center or guard in the draft. I would think you want to go free agency. And then the other position in free agency.
Yeah, you want to go free agency on the center. You don't want to.
You think?
Well, no, what I'm saying is you could draft one for the future, but you're going to need one now. So I don't know if you want to draft one and he's going to play right away. Is that the case? Do you have to sign one? I don't know. Maybe I'm also full of the crap also.
Listening to Daniel Jeremiah and these guys talk about this class of linemen, they're starters to be had, Bone, the third and fourth round, these guys believe. Like, immediate starters.
All right, immediate. Okay.
You know, like, look at that guy, Tyler Bortolini. Where's he going to go? Out of Wisconsin. You know, and then there's ones that will go higher than that. Zach Frazier, West Virginia, Jackson Powers, Jackson. What's his name? Can't be Jackson Powers.
Jackson Powers Johnson.
That's it. What if his parents?
That sounds like one of Mac's sponsors.
they should have named, his parents should have named him Johnson Powers Johnson. That would have really been a cool name. No, am I the only one?
I might have been
a little dirty as well, possibly.
Mac, also, there's a free – how about this idea? This is how my brain operates here on a Wednesday. Free agent center Lloyd Cushenberry.
Yeah, he's out there.
But guess what, Mac? Then we develop not the tush push, the cush push.
Fixed it.
Fixed it. Get the tush out of here. Give us the cush.
You get Cush's tush, and you give a push, and then the berries start moving along with the tush. You know what I mean? That's it.
Coffee,
that's
what happens. Coffee again. I got to stop drinking during the show. Coffee. You're on fire today.
The man. Guard. See, I was thinking veteran guard and draft center. You could do it maybe the other way around. The guards in free agency, Robert Hunt, Miami, he's been mentioned by multiple guys, right? Joe Person included. Mike Onwenu out of New England has been mentioned by multiple guys, Person and Fowler. And then there's another one. Like, I keep looking at the Seattle guys. Again, maybe they'll go after no Seattle guys, and maybe we're just reading this, you know, the Canales ties in and it means nothing. But Damian Lewis from Seattle is a guard that's a free agent.
Damian, our guy, you know? D-Lou, huh? How about that? No?
a different D-Lou.
Oh, so not the Seattle coach. That's our friend.
Did you see where D-Lou took a new job? Did you see where he went?
I did not see it, no.
I forgot. I think he's basically like getting a better job, bumping pay and stuff. But he left Seattle. I guess he probably had to leave Seattle, right? Pete Carroll's staff. Was let go, but yeah, I forget where it was. I don't know. I'll figure it out before the show ends. I wanted to give him a little shout out. Ezra Cleveland, Dalton Risser, they're guard free. If he's like, feels like it's a good free agent guard crop. So that's why I said that. Go free agent guard.
What about Drew Holiday? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were talking the Hornets guard situation.
Save that for a couple of months.
Let me go back to the NFL guards.
By the way, that's something Mark from Gastoni would do. Bless the man.
My God.
Bless the man. That time that we had him on, and it was during the time of the year when the Panthers and Hornets were both playing.
Uh-huh.
And we had him on to do a Hornet or Panther pep talk like he would every Friday. And we assumed he knows he's on to do a Panthers pep talk. Well, the Hornets were playing that night. And you know how he loves his bugs. And he says, "We doing Panthers or Hornets?" I love that man.
We didn't talk about this on the air. And for an update here, Mark is in a dire situation. So we're monitoring today. Any updates, we'll provide them. But we're also sharing some Mark stories to make us smile and laugh today as well as you know, we try to figure out his situation. But there was a couple weeks ago we had one where I don't know how he had not, I guess NASCAR wasn't in his wheelhouse. He was watching Daytona, though. I think Twitter was all following Daytona. And he sent me a text and said, "That whole sport is rigged. They knew in advance what was going to happen." And I was like, "All right, explain this." He said, "Did you not hear the announcers? They said they could see the big one coming a mile away. If you know a mile out, who's going to win? This thing is rigged." And I had to explain. They just meant the cars were jammed up.
Yeah.
He thought it meant that they actually had like a script.
I'm telling you, man.
He's giving me so many.
He said, "Bone, they said it on the broadcast right there. Mike Joy said you could see it coming."
By the way, here's that moment that you were talking about, Macker. Again, yes, he was on hold. We didn't go to him first. We went to Sirloin first.
Who did a Panther pep talk, by the way.
Yep. Yes, and then Mark had this this amazing moment.
"We doing Panthers or the Hornets?"
Oh, man. He needs your prayers now, big time. There's no doubt about it, y'all. No doubt about it. A lot of people are saying, bringing up wide receiver names. This texter says, "Who's the wide receiver playing? Please tell me it's Calvin Ridley." Another texter brings up Gabe Davis. Yeah, maybe this is the position where Joe Person's words need, because I was on there yesterday, Bone, on Twitter, saying, "Give me Calvin Ridley. Come on, Dan Morgan, do this for us." And texter's like, "Oh, we don't have cap money." And my point was, well, we're going to get cap money, right? We're restructuring things, we're cutting and that sort of thing. But then the Cameron Wolf tweet came out, Cameron Wolf NFL Network. And he dropped that one on us where it said many teams view Calvin Ridley now as the best free agent wide receiver in the class. And many teams are ready to pay him like their wide receiver one. And it's like, I'm not sure we can do that. Not to mention, Bo,
is he going
to
get overpaid because the market didn't have as many wideouts out there?
Because Pittman, Evans, and Higgins and all these other guys, right, were scooped up.
Are you better off just getting, like, Tyler Boyd for much less money or one of those guys?
Tyler Boyd, Dart Davis. Yeah.
Go for less money, draft one, and maybe not a 1A wideout, but a guy that – and then you just if you go get a Gabe Davis or Tyler Boyd, draft a guy – then you just have to kind of hope, hey, maybe Mingo can develop into something here as well. Still.
Can you get your future wide receiver one at 33? You know what I mean? Like it should be possible in this draft class, but the Panthers have to know what they're doing, man. Dan Morgan has to be infinitely better than Scott Fitterer at this.
I mean, 33 is not – I mean, where did A.J. Brown get picked in his draft? Where was he at in his draft? A.J. Brown and
Metcalf. Where was Debo taken?
Yeah, A.J. Brown
was studs taken outside the first round all the time.
A.J. Brown was picked 51. Yeah. D.K. Metcalf, he fell a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's plenty of dudes.
There's studs taken at that position and others outside the first round all the time. It's just usually not by the Panthers. Like, we need to. You know what I mean? Personnel decision-making. I worry a little bit that it's the same scouting department. But Dan Morgan, show us what you got, man. Show us that you are not Scott Fitterer, please.
Mac, another FNZ legend, Hacksaw, sent a text.
Nice.
MFG forever thought his name was Sean, not Hacksaw. He'd call him up and say, hey, Sean, it's me. He did not understand it was Hacksaw. He called him Sean all the time.
What? Where did that come from, Sean?
Saw Sean, I
he thought it was Hack Sean.
Hey, Sean, Hacksaw. I don't know. If you've got an MFG story, heck, our security guard out here.
We need to tell some MFG stories.
Our security guard out here has one because Mark worked one night for WBT Radio overnight. And they gave
him. That's a true story.
They gave him a badge. Hand to God. As of yesterday, that badge still works. All the security things in place here. Mark can wander in whenever he wants to.
He still has the badge.
Baby.
And it works, baby.
You have gotten questioned before for your badge.
I know. Well, I had two at once. Do you remember that whole thing? And I don't know who the woman security guard is, but she met me at the side exit because I scanned in with the one that I wasn't supposed to have.
Yeah.
And she said, why do you got that badge? And I said, I had nothing.
And your badge had like a big bushy mustache when you took the photo. So you
still
didn't
does,
look,
yeah.
You still have
still
that
does,
one?
Yeah.
How about this?
Listen to Mac and Bone every weekday morning from 6 to 10. Instant replay continues with more in a moment. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
You're listening to Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Because great radio the second time around is always twice as nice. This afternoon on the Wesson Walker Show.
I can't tell you how excited I am just to be sitting here in the seat today. Extremely thankful for this opportunity. It's an incredible situation to be a part of. And again, I'm just very, very thankful. You know, Rick and Gabe have communicated very clearly that we want to turn this thing into the premier franchise of the NBA. And that's exactly what we're going to do. And I can't tell you how excited I am to do that in this beautiful city of Charlotte and the Carolinas in general. The fan base here, extremely loyal, knowledgeable, passionate, and just the community itself. I can't wait to get out there and have you guys help. So very thankful to get started in that way.
The premier franchise in the NBA. Get ready, folks. Jeff Peterson, your new shot caller, the executive vice president of basketball operations, Jeff Peterson, speaking to media today during the introductory press conference alongside majority stakeholders in Gabe Plotkin and Rick Schnall, who went about the hiring process looking for a new shot caller in Trajan Langdon for the New Orleans Pelicans, whether it was going to be a Mike Gansey, a couple names in the works for a while. Eventually, they settled on Jeff Peterson, who is someone that Rick Schnall had familiarity with during his time being a minority stakeholder with the Atlanta Hawks organization. So what are some of the main takeaways? We'll have some of the audio cut up a little bit later on in the show. We have Gabe Plotkin and Rick Schnall sound now. Maybe we can get to that here. But I think one thing I wanted to know was the executive vice president title. I don't want to make a big deal out of it, but it was weird, I guess, to see vice president instead of just straight up president of basketball operations. Mm-hmm. Did that have anything to do with the amount of power that he might have? I don't know why it's EVP instead of president of basketball ops, like you see a lot of the other guys that are making these decisions. But the owners made it clear that Jeff is the chief basketball decision maker. Everything will be done in consultation with the owners, but they did make it clear that Jeff Peterson will be the chief basketball decision maker. Seems like good news. Because that's one of the first questions you want to ask from your owners is, are they going to relinquish control over this thing, basketball or sports ops wise? And it feels like that's what they're telling us. I even saw Nada talk about this. Maybe some people got a little hung up on the, they're going to work in consultation with us. Okay, I just expect that
anyway, because that's the landscape we're in. I think the owners are always going to be consulted by the chief decision maker, but it still might be them driving it. And that's exactly the word that I think Rick Schnall used, is that it is going to be Jeff Peterson driving the decision-making process. So I'm okay with everything they said there as far as who has total control over this. Jeff is still going to be the guy making the decision.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And so, like I said, now is the time for him to step in. Obviously, there's not a ton he's going to be able to do at this very moment. As well, but as I've said, I think he comes in with some nice pieces to work with. He talked about how there was going to be hope for the Queen City here with this team and wanting to turn them into a premier basketball franchise. I mean, obviously a cynic would say, well, what else do you expect him to say, taking a new job? But, you know, you have to be excited. And like I said, it's going to be a wait and see approach to see just what he's going to be able to bring to this franchise.
So operating such as we're going towards the ultimate goal and being the premier franchise. Like, it's not going to be able to happen when you have Boston in the league with the Lakers in the league, but you can certainly make a lot more progress than what they've done in recent history. Another takeaway for me is when there was the question, I believe Willie P asked something along these lines, but Rick Schnall was acting. So they were asked about how this team operated at the trade deadline. And what was funny to me was it felt like they seemingly just ran everything. And I was joking with Fitty before we hopped on the mic. Poor Mitch. Mitch can't get any credit. The parting shot, the ability to collect a top two protected first from Dallas. In exchange, yeah, you're backing off, Mitch, and they're making sure of it. PJ Washington, you get a first round pick for him. You get a first rounder for Terry. You get all these pieces that are helping you win some games and just look like a better product on the floor from Oklahoma City. And you get a couple of seconds. It was seemingly like Gabe Plotkin and Rick Schnall were calling the shots all at that moment. And that was a question that we had at that time. How much of it was just the driving force of ownership to say, I want you to be active, make it happen? And how much was it them looking at one individual target in a Davis Pertans, Trey Mann, Grant Williams? How much of it was it them saying, these are the players I want in return? And I thought that was funny because here they are speaking about how they operated at the deadline, and they seem to be in a space where it was all our call. And I thought that was kind of funny to me. And the other thing is, he said, we didn't really want to get better, or we didn't anticipate getting better. And understandable.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's so much saying the quiet part out loud. You just don't often hear sellers at the deadline speak about it that way. But Rick and Gabe were telling you, we didn't look to get better at the deadline, but we did, and we collected assets. I believe he said we didn't plan to get better, but we did get better while collecting assets. Like, hell yeah, man. That's great. I totally agree. It was the running joke for a while. How does a team sell at the deadline with the intent to get worse, but then you are just able to get more competent bodies and you look better while also getting a couple of first round selections? They did a very nice job at the deadline. Disregarding this 5-game losing streak, it doesn't matter. You have injuries, you have assets. We never expected them to make a real run to the play-in anyway, at least I didn't. So this is very good, and it was funny to see how, okay, yeah, it looks like they were controlling damn near 100% of all of it.
Yeah, and it just speaks on how much of a struggle the last roster was when you see that they weren't trying to get better, but they did kind of by accident. And that's the thing that you took from it. But you loved what you heard from Peterson as far as him talking about the fans, and he gave the fans a nice compliment as far as leadership telling him that they want this to be the premier franchise. I mean, I don't know, again, you know, what an owner, what else they may say, but I really do start to get the belief that this ownership group does want to transform this franchise into something special and something like what it once was as far as the energy level, the buzz, no pun intended, around the city about this team and what they could bring, like it was when, you know, when you were that kid and you couldn't wait to go to a Hornets game because you knew how lit it was going to be. Those days need to return, and we've gotten a little bit of a taste of it at times, but we need a lot more of it, and so hopefully this is the guy that's going to bring that.
Scott in Belmont writes this in on the FanDuel text line. Y'all would give Tepper hell if it were the same case. No, we wouldn't. If right. This is how they operated, we would not give David Tepper hell if he was saying it is going to be their decision. They're going to be driving everything, but it's going to be in consultation with us as everything, but they're going to be the ones making the final decision. No, we wouldn't. look, if we have reports about Rick Schnall and Gabe Plotkin running the show in the next couple of years, then we'll have the smoke for Rick Schnall and Gabe Plotkin. Don't have that right now. Don't have any time to go off of. Sure, Rick Schnall and Gabe Plotkin operated very differently at the deadline, but that was with somebody they were going to let go of anyway. They're going to move on from him. So do you want to let the guy, like, it makes sense to me, if you're going to fire this person, and there was really nothing he could do in Mitch Kupchak, or at least allow him to move to an advisory role, because I guess he wasn't fired, he was just moving to an advisory role, but we all know what that means. If you knew that this guy wasn't going to have the job anymore, really no matter what he did, right, it was going to be really tough, then okay, this is the direction you want to set. We're going to go get somebody different, whether it be Langdon, whether it be Gansey, Lloyd from Minnesota, whoever. They decide to go with someone they're familiar with. They know what Jeff Peterson is about. Rick Schnall told you in this press conference. They've had a relationship for 10 years now, going back to their days in the Hawks organization. So I even like that. Like, if we want somebody to take control of basketball ops, I want it to be somebody that ownership trusts. I don't want them to hire someone that they don't trust as much as possible, because then they are probably going to be the ones that are meddling all around the basketball ops. Nah, man, go ahead. Hire Jeff. I know you know him. That's great. Do that. And then let him work. And it feels like they're going to do it. But this idea, like, I'm a realist here, okay? Like, I understand that every owner, really with every franchise, and maybe I shouldn't speak in absolutes, but three quarters of all owners are going to have some say or be in the know for every step of the process made at what's going to happen on the court or on the field. So I understand that. I'm not asking these guys to put their hand over their eyes, look away, and say, okay, do whatever you want to. I'm a realist in that fact. I know that the owners have something to do with these decisions made. But I just don't want them making it and then forcing your general manager's hand. And I don't get that vibe at all from ownership here in Charlotte nowadays.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% on that. I think that they're going to bring this guy in and they are going to let him work. And I do like the fact that the relationship was already there, because we've already seen when you try to throw something together with the team, the other team here in Charlotte, the NFL team, what that can look like. And so now that you have some trust, some continuity, everybody in lockstep there over in that building, I think that can do nothing but bring positives for this franchise.
AJ writes in, y'all are funny. Tep quite literally said the exact same type of thing. Yo, David Tepper told Ron Rivera what defense to run. This is different. Am I going crazy?
Nope.
Stop trying to act like this is the same. David Tepper told Ron Rivera what defense to run. He came out from behind the backdrop and told you that Bryce Young was a point guard, and that's why we should draft him, because we can save money on wide receivers. This is not the same. If you are telling me to be warned about this, hey, I don't know, these owners look like they're going to meddle with Jeff Peterson, cool, maybe we can see how that works in the next couple of years and we can come back and revisit this issue. But stop trying to make this the same thing when we have evidence on what Tepper has already done. That's crazy. If I get word that Rick Schnall is telling Jeff Peterson to deploy a certain zone defense, to tell that to the head coach, Steve Clifford, whoever it may be,
giving him tips for LaMelo, what he needs to do to improve his game,
then I'll say we're screwed for both the Panthers and the Hornets. Then I'll come around on that. But I'm not doing that here. I'm not going to start off by saying, well, we got another Tepper, except we got two of them now with Charlotte. Can't get any worse. I'm not there. And it doesn't seem like they're operating that way.
No, it does not seem like they are. And so time is going to tell, but I just like how things are moving with the Hornets, and I feel like that there's a lot of positives to go around, but I do think that fans thinking that this is like Tepper saying, if Tepper said the same thing, we would be on him, but we also don't have a lot of the other stuff with this new ownership group that we've had around Tepper as well to be having those opinions where you get on the defensive about certain things either.
The other part of it is, if you were to say that the owners did everything at the trade deadline, guess what? They won the deadline. So that helps a little bit. But yeah, Mitch Kupchak was gone. He was gone. He's going to go to an advisory role. And then they were going to move on to Jeff Peterson. And the fact that you have that relationship, we'll see how it all plays out. I wanted to get to this because this is noteworthy enough for us to play here in the first hour. So Steve Clifford spoke after the loss last night. There was a game last night. The Hornets lost to the Orlando Magic. It got away from them in the second half. Miles Bridges hurt his wrist. He would come back. But what an abysmal game from him. 3 of 16 from the field, missing at the rim consistently. Brandon Miller, in my opinion, didn't take enough shots in the first half. I thought Micić and Mann played well. But overall, Orlando, very good basketball team. The last 2 weeks, they have the fourth best point differential in the entire league. Like, this team is balling right now, and they're coming for now and the future. Hornets lose, whatever. We go to the postgame presser, and I ask Steve Clifford about the lack of size that we all know. They've had a lack of size ever since Mark Williams went down with injury. They didn't address size at the deadline. They just got better and more bodies that are NBA level. But once I was asking him about that, it seems like he may have unintentionally revealed a certain somebody being out for the rest of the season. Let's play that clip, Fitty, and see if everybody else feels the same way.
In the big picture, you know, so much is evaluation, you know, but to truly evaluate, which our guys are doing, we have to play to win, which, you know, we did. We lacked the energy tonight. But I, you know, like those things you're talking about, it's just where we're at. You know, I mean, we're going to be smaller here for the rest of the year. So, you know, we're going to have nights like we did against Philadelphia, right, where, you know, like the biggest difference in the game was offensive rebounding points for them, you know. But, you know, it will give us a good chance to evaluate a lot of guys and see where we're at going into the summer, though.
We're going to be small for the rest of the year.
Hint, hint.
Does Steve Clifford say that if he anticipates Mark Williams returning? In my opinion, no, because that would be weird. We have 20 games left. We have 20 games left to go in the regular season. If he anticipates Mark Williams coming back at some point, he might say, we'll see where we are in 10 games.
Right.
We'll see where we are with these injuries that we're dealing with right now. He wouldn't say, we're going to have to be smaller the rest of the year. And even his focus changes a little bit. And what we can do with the smaller lineup is we can go through some evaluation. Like, there's an evaluation process here, and that will be good in building towards the future. But I think he just told you without telling you. It's not an official declaration, but Wes, Mark Williams ain't coming back this
year. Real quick, do you think that this is a problem that could go into next year?
I hope not, but lower back injury for a big guy.
You know, big man, when they have those types of injuries, man, that's a scary thing.
Concerns me.
Yeah.
It feels like they're doing the thing where they try to avoid surgery, which is understandable. Back surgery, a lot of times it doesn't go well. Sometimes it works for you, and sometimes it doesn't. I understand trying to rehabilitate this, especially in a season where you're not going to make the play-in. Maybe Mark's presence would have altered that. Now, that's a different conversation. But with me, if you want to sit him out, cool. He's still a valuable part of this future going forward. You have to be concerned. Wes, this guy was getting questionable designations for games. I think part of that was gaming the system a little bit. The NBA said, no, we need to be real on these injury designations. And then they finally said, okay, he's out. I was tripping. He's out. And so we haven't seen him questionable or doubtful, but he was doubtful for like 9-10 straight games. And now we know that he's out and it's not even a question. It sucks, man. I wish he could come back. I think he makes a big difference for this team defensively. Like, even if he's not as physical as you want, he's smart and he's big. And those guys don't fail. They might not have the craziest ceiling, but they don't fail. And the fact that you don't have that, the fact that you don't have that hurts this tiny team. I want that isolated too. When I was asking Steve Clifford, I didn't have it in that specific clip, but earlier in the answer, he said, look, man, we're tiny. We're tiny. Like, this is just what we are. So I'm hoping that Jeff Peterson can come in, give them size, but really, I'm hoping Mark Williams can come back and give them size. That's what we're hoping.
You can hear Wes and Walker live and local every weekday afternoon from noon to 3. Sit tight and stay locked because Instant Replay continues next. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
You're listening to Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Because great radio the second time around is always twice as nice. Earlier this afternoon on the Kyle Bailey Show.
Right now, let's welcome in former AP Coach of the Year, longtime Tar Heel, former head coach, national champ as a player, the great Matt Daugherty, back in studio here on a Wednesday. Coach, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Wow, that was very nice. What you need, like you need a loan or something?
You seen inflation lately? I could use. You got any cash on you?
Oh, Bidenomics.
You seen gas prices?
Shrinkonomics.
You and I both drive big gas guzzling trucks.
We do.
So if you want to float me some cash for the ride home, I'll take it.
All right.
Or you could just run up on me after the show and scare the bejesus out of me on the interstate. Because you like to do that. So let's get into it, man. Carolina thumped another team that you used to coach last night, Notre Dame, on senior night. We've seen a lot of great nights at the Smith Center. You know, a lot of great occasions, Duke Carolina games, senior nights, big wins, all that. But how fun was that last night for you as a proud Tar Heel?
Yeah, it was really neat because you just don't know. I mean, you don't know how sharp they – you want to go into March – well, you want to go into the ACC tournament playing well, and they played probably as well last night as they've played all year. And to see contributions from guys that came off the bench, Washington hitting a couple threes, they're showing that they have depth. It's really takes a lot of pressure, I think, off of RJ and Amando. So I thought they played excellent against a much improved Notre Dame basketball team. That's going to be good down the road. They're just very young.
I thought they exhibited a lot of toughness last night, you know, a commitment to the defensive end. And we've seen that for stretches from them this year, right? And so I think the only question is, you know, can you muster it when you need it most, right, with this team? You've got the veteran leadership. We've seen examples of it. You had the extra juice last night with it being senior night. But can you find that consistently over the next couple of weeks? Because I think if they can, and you'd agree with this, they got a chance to cut down the nets.
Well, the thing that I really give Coach Davis a lot of credit for is I think that their defense is much improved. Whether it's, you know, he took the bull by the horns or he delegated it to an assistant, because he's got great assistants with Lebo, Pat Sullivan, Sean May, Brad Frederick, that their defense is much improved. Connected in a stance, they hustle, their closeouts are excellent. They didn't give much to Notre Dame. Notre Dame went scoreless, I think, for at least 5 minutes in the second half. They were stuck on 25 points forever, and it was really a tribute to the defense. And then when you have good defense, then you either get a turnover or a long rebounds, and that leads to transition. And the other thing that Hubert's done better this year is they run. They're pushing the ball up court. And I always felt, even when I had unathletic teams, that you want to try to score in the first 8 seconds of the shot clock, because that's when the defense is unset. And I think that they're taking advantage of that. And then when Cormac Ryan's making shots, that really opens up things, because you could shut down Davis a little bit because he's undersized. So, you know, if you get a matchup where you have big guards, it could be tough for him. And so now who else is going to score? Harrison and Cormac are the guys that really, if they're playing well in March, Carolina's going to be a tough out.
Well, yeah, and those guys, it was nice to see all the seniors, you know, make some contribution last night, or at least the guys that, you know, normally get some minutes. I think Paxson Wojcik had a couple of rebounds last night. And so that was, you know, the cool part of senior night, to see guys get involved. But I think the senior that everybody wants to talk about today is Armando Bacot. You know, it's cool that his final shot in the Dean Dome was a three-pointer, made the first two of his career last night. The Roy Williams reaction was amazing. But you've touched on this over the past couple of years. And, you know, Armando's been around a long time.
Yeah.
He's played the most games in ACC history. You know, he's got the most rebounds in Carolina history. I know what the requirements are to have your jersey hung in the Smith Center, and I don't think he's reached any of those landmarks yet. But, you know, where does he belong in the lore of Carolina basketball as of today?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. Because a lot of those stats were based on, you know, the COVID years, right? And so you know, it's really tough for me. I think his jersey will be up there, but, you know, you get it retired if you are a player of the year. You get it honored for other reasons. And I think his jersey will be honored. He deserves that, I think, Armando. But, you know, going down statistically as one of the better players, statistically. But when you look at, you know, overall talent, you know, I mean, I, names that are rolling off of my tongue right now, James Worthy, Sam Perkins, Rasheed Wallace, you know, those are guys that were dudes in college and were dudes in the NBA. And Armando's not that, you know, just from an NBA standpoint, from a talent standpoint. He is a very good college basketball player. He's a very good, excellent Tar Heel, and deserves to have his jersey in the rafters. Statistically, he's broken a lot of records, but in terms of the lore, there's some players ahead of him in terms of all-time greats at Carolina.
Yeah, I'm trying to refresh my memory. To have you either have to what? You have to be the most outstanding player in the tournament. You have to be an All-American.
I think you have to be the player of the year in college basketball in one of the top publications or AP or something like that to be your jersey retired. Other than that, the honors, I'm not sure of how you get your jersey honored otherwise, because there's a lot of honor jerseys, but retired numbers, you have to be a player of the year.
Yeah, so I'm looking at this right now. This, you can correct me if any of this is wrong. I'm just looking at a list. You have to be an MVP of a national title winning team, member of an Olympic gold medal winning team, first or second team All-American, ACC player of the year, or the NCAA tournament most outstanding player. Those appear to be the five.
That's to be honored.
Okay.
So there's a difference between honored jersey retired jersey.
Yeah, sorry
that's
about that.
Honored.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. So that, there's still work to be done if he wants to be remembered in that way.
Well, I don't think he'll be a player of the year in college basketball.
No, but I mean, I guess it's conceivable that he could be the tournament most outstanding.
But I don't think that gets you to retire jersey, because Sean May was retired. He did that. But his jersey's not retired. I believe his jersey's honored. Again, the nuance between honored and retired.
Okay. All right. There you go. We got Coach Matt Daugherty in studio with us, not for too much longer here, so I do want to hit on one or two more things.
Yes.
You've actually earned the respect of state fans, some of them, over the last couple of years that you and I have been together. I think they respect you. Well, I mean, yeah. I've read you the text. You like them when I read them to you. Yeah.
Do I? The bass fishing team?
Stop it. They'd like your thoughts on this, given your experience and wisdom when it comes to college basketball coaching. I guess there's no guarantee they part ways with Kevin Keats at the end of the year, but a lot of state fans would like them to, and I think that's a very real possibility. In terms of candidates out there, we've talked about Pat Kelsey down at Charleston is somebody who could come to mind. Yesterday, we even entertained the idea of Will Wade, who's at McNeese State right now. If that job comes open, what do you think they should be looking for? Because it feels like Kevin Keats and company have missed a bit of an opportunity with Roy and Kay stepping down to really step up the ladder in the conference. That just hasn't happened the last couple of years.
Yeah, my first call would be Dusty May at FAU.
Really?
Dusty's got a $10 million contract guaranteed, a million a year for 10. I got to know Dusty a little bit. I coached at FAU. I know people around the program. He's a special guy and a special leader. He would be my first phone call. I do like Patrick Kelsey. I think he's kind of similar mold. So, yeah, you know, one of those guys. It's just it's a good job.
Yeah.
It's a really, really good job. They just haven't turned the corner, since Herb Sendek. I mean, quite frankly, Herb, they took for granted because Herb wasn't Jim Valvano. Herb didn't have Jim Valvano's personality. By the way, nobody does. And so, but Herb went to 5 out of 10 tournaments. They would love to be at 5 of 10, over the last 10 years. And so Herb was a good coach. I think Dusty May is a really good to great coach. And he would be one of the first phone calls if I was the athletic director at NC State.
I think that, yeah. I mean, you could do a hell of a lot worse, that's for sure, given what they've accomplished over the last couple of years. All right, there you go. NC State fans, you got your answer from Coach Matt Daugherty. Coach, it's good to see you, man.
Yeah, man, always. Thank you very much. And I hope that our boy here, Smoke, doesn't hack up a loogie on the microphone. That was pretty nasty, wasn't it?
Maybe if, Steve Forbes and Wake would stop choking away winnable games, he wouldn't have to do that.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I just saw a late text come in that said, "Hey, KB, ask Coach if NC State offered him, would he take it?"
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm 62, so 10 years at 2 a year. Yeah, I would take it.
You would take the state job at 10 years for 2 a year.
2 years guaranteed.
All right, boo. There you go. There's your candidate right there. Coach Matt Daugherty will take the job.
You've tuned in to Instant Replay. When the audio was so good, it has to be heard again. Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The
Charlotte Sports Fan.